You are listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF-FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey, kids.
I'm Batman.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's dance-off, bro. Me and you.
Hello, and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm your host, Dan Collins.
Hey there, this is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gill.
Hi, I'm Sam Tweedle. I could talk about Archie forever.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
They know that I would have put it under my shirt and ran off.
What are you talking about? I haven't seen any Action Comics number 1.
Gwenpool, I mean Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff, this is going to be worth a few bucks. And nobody wanted it.
Yes, Dan, the Killing Joke does need to be R-rated.
I kind of like punching the walls of reality as a way to bring a character back because nobody knows what we're talking about right now.
Dark Knight Strikes Back was one of the biggest piles of dung ever, and it was what, $10 an issue?
We need to shame Sam. He is not here because he's gone to the Gem and the Holograms movie.
Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm Dan Collins.
And I'm Sam Tweedle.
And I'm Chris Gilpin.
Yes, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Hey Kids Comics.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was having a conversation with, I believe it was Marty not long ago, about just how many people each week actually download and listen to the podcast to Hey Kids Comics. And I was astonished by the numbers, actually. I've never really thought too much about how many people are listening. And it's a lot more than I ever expected. So
three?
No.
Three people?
No. Marty was really sharing to me the numbers. And I'm going to actually start this episode by saying thank you to all of you who actually do take the time to spend part of your week with us and listen to us. I was really astonished. I just kind of come in and do the show. I never really thought too much about it. And
you can probably thank them all individually right now if you want.
Oh, come on, guys. It's a lot more than that.
It's like romper room.
It's like romper room. Bob. And
John.
Well, let's see. It's Andrew Hahn and Adam Bishop.
I'll get a text in 2 minutes because Adam is listening live tonight.
Oh, is he? That's great. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Adam.
Thanks for listening. So, did anything happen in comics this week?
Well, one big thing, unfortunately.
I have a feeling that's what we're talking about.
Well, we've got lots to talk about because, believe it or not, I actually read comics.
Do you want to start with that?
No, we might as well start with me saying, Adam says, hi, Sam. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Go.
He just texted me.
Adam, did you order my Freddie Mercury pops?
Anyways, don't reply to that, Adam. Yeah, let's start with the elephant in the room, which is the passing of Stan Lee
this week. The death
of
Stan Lee. So I'm sure it's something we've all thought about over the last week and we all want to talk about. I've been wondering about how do we even start breaching this topic? And what I thought we could maybe do is spend a little bit of time let's take turns talking about what's our favorite memory of Stan Lee.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Who wants to go first?
Dan can go first.
I'll go first. I don't have any real memories of Stan Lee. Like, I've never, unfortunately, never had the chance to meet him. Never had a chance to see him in person, even across the room. And I'm not one of those guys. Like, I'm not the type of guy that watches a lot of interviews with people and stuff. So, like, I know Sam, you have an interview with Stan Lee that you like to talk about.
No, I never interviewed Stan Lee.
Well, not an interview you did, but one where he was being interviewed and he was talking. But I just don't really have any of those kind of memories, except somebody posted. This is going to be my Stan Lee memory now. Okay. Somebody posted the 1992 Marvel trading card of like Mr. Marvel, which was Stan Lee's face made out of all the other Marvel characters' faces. And I hadn't seen that card for literally decades. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, yeah, I remember that card. And that is Stan Lee. So, you know, none of us would be here right now without Stan Lee.
It's true.
You can argue both sides of the controversy regarding Stan Lee and taking credit or not giving credit.
I don't even want to talk about that.
But none of that matters because he's the one that said, hey, let's make superhero comics.
Yeah.
Instead of and literally founded Marvel Comics, making superhero comics instead of other comics.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
birth of the Silver Age.
Yeah, funny enough, that interview that I found that we were talking about back from the 70s, when he was talking, I didn't watch all of it, but he was talking about the Fantastic Four, and he specifically said, when we created the Fantastic Four, or when we wanted to try this, right? Like, it wasn't... So I don't know. Anyway, Sam says we're not going to talk about it, but I just thought that was interesting that he was using the word we at that point in time. But,
mm-hmm. What I think was interesting about Stan Lee was a number of things, okay? First off... this is what I think Stan Lee did so revolutionary. We all talk about how he created his own universe. And he created comics like no one ever did. And his big thing is there had been superheroes before. And we all look at DC superheroes, even Marvel, the timely characters. He was the first one that put human characteristics and flaws into the characters. And we all carry on about that.
Yeah.
We all carry on about how he created so many characters. When you think about like the important characters he created, Spider-Man, Thor, X-Men, the Hulk,
mm-hmm.
And the list goes on and on and on and on. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah. And that was the 60s.
But this is a different thing, though. And no one talks about this. You know, he's not the first person to create multiple characters like that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about a guy named Gardner F. Fox. Gardner F. Fox was a Golden Age comic writer. He wrote for National Comics, which later became DC Comics. He created The Sandman, Hawkman, The Flash, Black Canary, Johnny Thunder, Dr. Midnight, Dr. Fate, The mm-hmm. Spectre. All these sort of like major DC characters that became legacy characters and have become fan favorites. Green Arrow was a Gardner F. Fox creation. So he didn't create Green Lantern. That was somebody else. But he created all these, you know, probably just as much of a universe as Stan Lee. But this is the difference between Stan Lee and what he did special compared to a guy like Gardner F. Fox. And it comes down to this. Stan Lee was the first person who believed in putting a face and a name to a comic creator to actually turn them into a celebrity, not just a writer, but to put the people behind the comic forth into the public.
Right.
Okay? Comic, and it's too bad Marty's not here because Marty would have a lot to say about this, but traditionally comic strip writers could become celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
Al Capp is a great example who did Little Abner. They were featured on Lee Falk, Charles Schultz. They were featured on television. They were interviewed. There was things written about them. While comic book creators were more kept back. Like, you know what I mean? They were just like, we know that Joe Kubert's now in the Joe Simons and the Jack Kirby's that started in the Golden Age. But they weren't celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
And Stan Lee was the first one who was like, you know what? We're doing something cool. Let's put... So he would do... You know, in the Marvel Comics, you know, like back in the Golden Age, they didn't even put... Sometimes didn't even put who was writing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Stan Lee was like, you know, he made sure everybody was represented in the first panel, but then he would give them like the... You know, Smiling Jack or mm-hmm. Stan the Man, and he, Fabulous Flo, and he would give them these, you know, these nicknames. He went one further, but I think what a lot of people don't realize too is take importance was the importance of Stan Soapbox.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah,
right,
yeah.
Because it was like I'm the editor I'm the editor of Marvel Comics. Well, I'm gonna write my thoughts and feelings, but he would also promote the other people in the bullpen. Right? Like, this is what Saul Brodsky, the letterer, is doing. You know what I mean? And he really pushed this idea that the people who create comics are more than just people writing comics in the shadows.
Yeah.
But we're writers, we are artists, that we need to be celebrated just like anybody else. And the whole idea now of comic superstardom, your Geoff Johns, your
Grant Morrison's,
your Alan Moore,
Jim Lee, Brian Bendis,
right.
Arthur Adams.
All of that is because Stan Lee was the first person who was like, I'm going to step out of the shadows, mm-hmm. and I'm going to, you know, become a face and a voice and a champion.
Yeah.
Stan Lee created the idea of a comic professional as a celebrity.
Yeah.
He was the first. He started that in the world of comic books.
Yeah.
Because Gardner F. Fox was just probably as prolific of a creator.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't. And interestingly enough, Gardner F. Fox is the person who started the DC revolution of comics too. He was one that was the editor at the time who was like, let's bring back the Flash.
Yeah.
Let's write the Flash. Gardner F. Fox created the second Flash, as well as the original, the Just League of America, all that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, he brought all the DC heroes back. So he was working at the same time. Like, he not only predates Stan Lee,
yeah.
but was a contemporary of Stan Lee, looking at what Stan Lee was doing with the Fantastic Four and going, oh, we need to do this too.
Yeah.
But I think that was the difference, where Stan was like, no, I'm going to be more than just a comic writer. This is what goes back to what you were saying too, about how everybody says, oh, Stan stole this and Stan stole that. Well, Stan, he didn't have to try to make Jack Kirby a celebrity.
Yeah.
He didn't have to make fabulous Flo Steinberg, who was the secretary, for crying out loud, secretary, you know,
yeah.
a celebrity. He was really into bringing forward them as a team and making everybody notable.
Yeah,
I think that's what he did really special. That's really what I think the special thing about Stan Lee was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. The other thing, too, and I found it interesting looking over the Facebook and the social media about how many people actually had pictures taken with Stan Lee.
Yeah.
He made himself extremely accessible.
Yeah.
Now, can I just want to jump in with a Stan Lee quote that fits what you were saying.
Okay.
I was looking for it while you were talking there. Yeah. He said, I used to be embarrassed because I was just a comic book writer while other people were building bridges or going on to medical careers. And then I began to realize entertainment is one of the most important things in people's lives. Without it, they might go off the deep end. I feel that if you're able to entertain people, you're doing a good thing.
There you go.
And that kind of goes with, not because, like, comic book writers weren't people to be idolized when he started.
Well,
they were just the people who did junky
also,
kids books.
Also,
right?
It was going through the time of when he started his first story was a scripted Captain America story that he had written when he was like 16 or 17 for Timely Comics. And when I mean scripted, is you would buy a Captain America book and then there'd be like a 2-page spread where it was not comics, but prose.
Yeah.
And his first thing was
a story, an actual story.
Yeah, yeah. So that would have been in the 40s. But when he really took off in the 50s, I mean, that was during the dark era where, you know, they were trying to ban comics. And that's when he really, just like you said, it wasn't proud. You know, you were literally comic book writers at that and creators at that time were literally put together in with the same pool as pornographers. It was comics and pornography, and it was being investigated together by the same committee. And I know because I have the comics and the pornography of that time in my collection.
Oh, man.
If you ever want to look up the big pornographer at that time was Irving Claw, and if you look at Irving Claw's stuff, which I do have books full of it, it's so different compared to today's pornography. I mean, it's quite tame.
Yeah.
This week on Hey Kids Pornography.
That's right.
The work of Irving Claw. Anyways, and his name is Irving Claw. That was really his name. So cool. Anyways, we've gotten off track. We're talking about Stan Lee.
Yes.
So
my memories, besides seeing him, his face on that Stan soapbox, right? Yeah, that animated face, was the cartoons, right? And how he's introduced to the cartoons.
Yeah, like,
you know, Excelsior, you know. But then on Mallrats, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, holy cow, that's Stanley. That's awesome, right? Yeah. But I did get to meet him. And it's kind of funny because it's interesting how some of us have crossed paths or been close and didn't even realize it.
Okay.
Like, we already know that Marty and I probably fought over comics at Dixon's Bookstore. So that's fine when we were kids. But the picture that Martin posted with him and Stan Lee, well, I have the same one, but it's me, of course. But it's the same night.
Oh, wow.
The same outfit on, right? But when I got my, I'll sidetrack a bit. When I got my picture done, Stan Lee actually said, good job. And I tell you, I almost freaked out.
Wow, that's great.
But after you got the picture, you have to go into one of the big halls and wait for him to come in to sign stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, everybody take a seat. Don't line up. Just everybody have a seat at the table. Well, I was so tired. Like, I was exhausted. So some people started lining up. And I just stood there. And I just ignored. I just stood there in line, even though they said, don't line up, right? And I did it. And I just kind of, because people started getting rowdy. And there was one guy yelling, and I'm pretty sure now it was probably Martin. No lineups, take a seat.
That's funny.
Either that or he was behind me or in front of me in line. But it's that night, he also did the big presentation, the Q&A, right? Apparently he really wasn't feeling well, and his handlers didn't want him to do the presentation, but he's like, apparently said, like, no way, I'm doing this, right? Mm-hmm. So it was just, you know, I can hear his, it's one thing to hear his voice on the TV or even up in a live panel, but standing beside him and getting your picture taken, and he goes, good job. It's like, oh my God, that's awesome.
Do you remember, I want to tell a story about the only time he spoke to me. And because it's pretty funny. Do you remember? Now his booker was Erin Gray from Buck Rogers.
Oh, okay.
Okay, all she right. books celebrities for autograph all shows, and that's who booked him. But he had this handler who would always go and organize all of his shows. And if you actually got Stanley's autograph, it was always a very well run. Like, they did that like clockwork, man. Like, it was like a what do you call that, assembly line. And they were so, they could have you in and out. And,
oh, yeah.
Oh, man, they knew what they were doing. And he had this handler who went with him everywhere, and he was this Hispanic gentleman. Very loud, very, could keep the crowd moving, very, could be aggressive, but very protective of Stan as well.
Right.
And you know what I mean? The kind of guy you need to be doing this. And I never knew the man's name. But every time you saw Stan, this Hispanic gentleman was always with him in whatever city, okay? So this is the first time I ever saw Stan Lee, and we're all, you know, we're all in the line, and there's a couple hundred people, and they're moving us. And I get in front of Stan Lee, and Stan's there, and he's looking at everybody, and he's kind of, you know, looking, and I put out my hand, and I guess you weren't supposed to touch Stan Lee. Right. I guess that wasn't a thing, but I put out my hand, and he looks at me, and he smiles, and he grabs my hand, and he shakes it.
There you go.
And I go, hi, Stan Lee, can you sign it to Sam? And he goes, sure I can. And he goes, to Sam. And all of a sudden, the Hispanic guy just freaks, and he goes, no personalizations, no personalizations. And I'm like, wow, thanks, Stan. I really appreciate this. And he goes, and you should. And then meanwhile, the Hispanic guy's losing it, and he's yelling at the crowd, no personalizations, no personalizations on any of your stuff. And, you know, as I walk through.
Yeah. But like, he wrote to me.
And if you look at my Facebook right now, it's the 8x10, and it says, to Sam, Stan Lee. Yeah. But I guess apparently that there wasn't supposed to be any, and you were supposed to touch Stan Lee. No one gave me the memo.
Right.
Yeah. So Stan Lee did shake my hand, and... But I remember that. Can you say it, Sam? He's like, to Sam, of course. And then
why don't they like the personal? Is it the time?
It's the time. They don't want to take everybody it takes more time to, and then they just want to make it with Stanley. They wanted to move you along.
You might
move
as well have a stamp, right?
Yeah, and the second time the second time they moved me along, the second time I got something signed. That's literally what it was. I don't even think Stan looked at anybody. You know, it was a whole different experience. So I've never said that I've met Stanley. I wouldn't say I did. We did exchange some words. It was great. But I just always, and again, remember you were talking about his voice?
Yeah.
I can still hear it where it was like, wow, I appreciate it. And you should, you know.
Excelsior.
When, and that's another thing I was thinking about this week with Excelsior. Stanley, as far as I was concerned, coined three phrases that became part of not just... became part of comic lingo.
Yeah.
Became part of the vocabulary. Can you name all three?
Obviously Excelsior.
Obviously, that's one.
That's mine.
And that was an 80s one.
Well, I know he used one a lot with the thing. It's clobbering time.
Like, well, no, that was a catchphrase. That's the thing. There were three. The first one was True Believers.
Oh, okay.
That was what he called his readers. True Believers.
So that's where they get the name for the reprints.
Right.
Oh,
okay. And that was that started in the 60s. In the 70s, he used to sign the at the end of the soap boxes, Nuff Said.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Nuff Which said. Was N-U-F-F yep. Said. Enough yep. Said, but Nuff Said.
Nuff Said, yeah.
Right?
I remember that one.
Okay. Yeah. And then Excelsior became an 80s one. Mm. And so that was actually a later one. But the fact that True Believers, Nuff Said, like these became part of the comic vocabulary.
Yeah.
And again, from somebody, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's really cool. Like, who can you name? Like, Bob Kane didn't do that, you know? you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that's really, really interesting, you know?
Yeah.
So... He was an original, and they're really... I always told people, in our subculture, to meet Stan Lee, it was kind of like meeting the Pope.
Yeah, basically.
You know, in our subculture, he was the Pope.
Yeah.
Was he the greatest? I know that I didn't like his later stories.
Yeah.
I thought the stuff he wrote in the last 25 years was pretty terrible.
Yeah, I mean...
But...
I know what you mean. It just wasn't the same.
But
the 90s weren't good to anybody, though.
Yeah. You know, I mean, if you asked me what my favorite Stan Lee story was, I don't know if I could bring up just one, but I could tell you a moment. I could tell you a moment of... wow. I've been playing a lot with memory lately. I think you both have heard me say that, and you've been reading that on my Facebook a lot. But I've been, because of things in my life, I had a very difficult time remembering anything from the ages of 14 to 29. And this summer, everything came back, and it's been very interesting. And it's so funny, but right now, as we're talking, I just had a memory of something that I haven't thought about in so long, and so this is the first time I've talked about it in probably a couple of decades. So get ready, folks. This is a story no one's ever heard before. Marty always bitches about how I say the same story all the time. Well, you wait for this, Martin Veruda. This is the one. But I remember as a young kid, I was in Boy Scouts. I hated Boy Scouts. I hated Boy Scouts. And to get a badge, the collector badge, you had to bring in your collection, and you had to do a presentation on your collection. So in Boy Scouts, I brought a long box of comics, right? Which I think at that time I just had one long box of comics.
That was your collection?
That was my whole collection. But how old are you in Boy Scouts? I don't know.
Like
12, 10, 13.
Yeah, 10 to 14-ish, somewhere.
So I was somewhere in that range. So I brought this long box and I did this presentation about comics. And you got to remember, this is the 1980s. In the 1980s, kids didn't collect comics. And if they did, they didn't admit it. I was one of those weird kids that...
Yeah.
It was really the Batman movie in 89 that made comic collecting Cool. So this is pre that. So no one, if you collected comics, you were considered childish or weird. So after the presentation, this kid comes up to me and he goes, you know, my dad has Fantastic Four number one. And I'm like, oh, I guess. But really? Yeah. Yeah. No, he doesn't. Nobody has Fantastic Four number one. You know how much that thing's worth? And he's like, no, my dad does. And I'm like, okay. And I remember at the Peterborough Public Library, there was like this hardcover book that had like a reprint of Fantastic Four number one that I was constantly taking out to reread. Mm-hmm. But I remember the next week, I'm sitting there at Boy Scouts waiting for the thing to start. And the kid shows up with a copy of Fantastic Four number one, beat up pretty bad, but it is, in a plastic bag, no backing board.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, look, it's Fantastic Four number one. I'm like, oh my God. And he's like, I'm like, can I see it? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, I'm like, can I read it? And he's like, well, I guess. So I remember, you know, we were in this church and there was a stage and the kids were playing floor hockey. Well, I went behind the curtain on the stage to hide. So the cub leader, the Boy Scouts, it was Boy Scouts, it wasn't Cubs, wouldn't find me as I read this brittle copy of Fantastic Four number one. And thinking to myself, and getting goosebumps. I had never seen, touched anything like it. And I haven't thought about this moment for 20 years until right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But that to me was magical.
Oh, yeah.
And that story is magical. Like, I mean, it was sort of the first Marvel superhero story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Stan had been doing writing stuff before that. But in retrospect, looking at it, did that kid's father know he had brought Fantastic Four number one to did the Boy Scout meeting?
Yeah, I doubt it.
To give to some dumb kid he didn't know to read?
Yeah.
And if my kid had ever done it, he would be grounded. He'd still be grounded. Like, literally today, he would still be grounded.
Yeah.
But I think that has to be my favorite Stan Lee story, is that Fantastic Four number one. I really do.
Cool.
I really do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, you know, it's funny. I always remember like the first part of it with them going up in the rocket ship and getting their powers, and then and before that, it's like, you know, Reed Richards shoots the four with a flame, and it shows them all getting together and meeting. And then I don't really remember anything about the thing with the mole men.
Oh yeah.
That happens afterwards. I just remember the first like 15 pages. You know, I don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that's mine. What about you guys? Can you think of anything or?
Yeah, I think I covered the good parts of Stan Lee in my life.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We want to talk Walking Dead now? I know Dan wants to talk about Walking Dead.
Well.
Did somebody die in that?
In which one? In the show?
In the TV show? We're talking about the TV show.
Okay.
So you probably won't like that.
Oh, I'll go look at records in the other room.
Well, I mean, it's been almost 2 weeks since Rick Grimes, quote unquote, died. I guess maybe I don't know.
Did he die?
No.
So he didn't die?
No. I like the first ending when he did die.
Let's set this up for Sam.
Okay. Right.
So you've got Rick Grimes in the previous episode. He gets thrown from his horse, and I'm going to say in like true Walking Dead, spit in your face, spit in the viewer's face fashion, he falls on a concrete slab with some rebar sticking out or something and gets impaled.
All right.
Zombies are coming towards him.
Two hordes in two different directions.
Yeah. Things are looking bad for Rick Grimes.
Yeah.
And then the next episode picks up and he starts having visions of characters who have died in the past. And they're kind of like helping him to keep moving.
To wake up.
Yeah, like,
wake up.
Because he passes out, obviously, from the pain and stuff. He wakes up.
Was Glenn one of them?
Glenn was in it. Like, he wasn't in it, actually. I'm just having a stroke.
John Barenthal was back as Shane.
What's Shane?
Shane.
Shane's
you know
partner.
Shane from the comics.
Partner.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember
first
that,
part, yeah.
But,
it's not like a made-up character.
No.
No.
Okay.
No.
Is Andre back?
No.
No,
because
was Dale.
See, the thing is that some of the characters who probably would have been
Dale
good
die,
to come
like,
back.
Recently?
No, long time ago.
Dale died.
No,
five
the
or six
actor
years
who played him.
No, that was the actor who played Herschel passed away. And guess who was back?
Herschel.
And,
ooh, creepy.
And an amazing, like, unexpected cameo there. Because, like, I was completely caught off guard because with the actor who played him having just passed away, surely this would have leaked that he was going to be in this episode.
But see, what happened to see Dan, they shot it before he died.
I'm aware of that.
I just wanted to point that out to anyone out there who may not have realized.
He wasn't a zombie.
What? Or was he?
Or was he? Go ahead, Dan.
So Rick goes on this this emotional journey, mm-hmm. which was actually fairly good. One of the stronger episodes in a while, in my opinion.
It sounds to me... Can I interrupt just for a second?
You've kind interrupted of, many times, well, but go ahead
that's
again.
That's what I do very well, apparently. It sounds like that, like when Tom Baker fell off the tower and all his companions are floating around him.
Haven't seen that episode yet.
Oh. You haven't seen Castrovalva?
No, because I'm watching
no,
Tom
not
Baker's
Cal-
in
no,
order.
No, it's not Castrovalva. That was Legopolis. Yeah, no, maybe. Okay. Castrovalva was
that's
Peter
Davison's
first one. So Legopolis. So I just, sorry, I spoiled how.
Yeah, geez, Sam. Yeah. You spoiled that 40-year-old show for me.
Okay.
Damn anyway. It.
Back to Walking right. Dead.
So
he goes on this emotional.
Stop it, Sam.
Okay, sorry.
He goes on this this emotional journey, ends up sacrificing himself to stop the zombie horde by blowing up a bridge.
Which he was standing right beside.
Which he was standing, like, pretty much on.
I thought you said he was impaled.
He got up. You weren't listening. You were too busy, interrupting.
Sorry.
And so, like, it was a great episode, and then you think Rick is dead. But he washes up on shore at the end of the episode and gets airlifted out by helicopter with another character.
A new character that's not in the book.
Yeah, a new character that's not in the comics. Dun, dun, dun.
But Andrew Lincoln is apparently never going to be on an episode of Walking Dead again. Apparently they're setting up movies.
See, now, I saw something that said that he might return for one episode at some point to have a, or that there might be a meeting of him and Michonne at some point. But, Sam, and then... While
wait, we're not done?
We're not done.
Oh my god.
And I know you think that like you're listening to me and making faces, but it was actually really good.
I bet it was.
And then it time jumps 6 years into the future, and his daughter is now like 8 years old and
wait.
The one that they killed in the comics, she's still alive.
Yeah.
And she's now like the new Carl.
Yeah.
But she's actually good, and she's, like, shooting zombies with arrows and kicking butt. Boom.
I thought
end of the episode.
Because they did the... I mean, I liked the first death. I would have been quite content with it, with the bridge explosion. I was kind of rolling my eyes that he washed up on shore near Anne, the junkyard leader, and the helicopter, and this whole bit about who's an A and who's a B, but... We'll get into that, I guess, later episodes. But it immediately did that time jump.
Yeah.
It shows a new group of people being surrounded by zombies. And they're trying to get away. And all of a sudden, these shots come out of the woods to clear a path for them. And they run into the woods. And there's this little girl by a tree. And she's got Rick's big-ass gun on her waist. And a sword. Not Michonne's sword, but a sword around her back. Mm. And they're like... Oh, thank you. Who are you? And she's like, I'm Judith.
Judith Grimes.
And she reaches down and picks up the hat and puts it on. It was kind of cool. Like, as a reader of the book, it was... You know,
I will say something. I really liked when they time jumped in the book.
Yes.
I really liked that.
Well, you remember when they time jumped and the new group of people came?
Yeah.
That's what this is.
Okay. But isn't all the characters when they time jumped in that, like, dead or not in the show?
No. No.
Well, I guess. I don't know.
But no, it was very interesting at the end of the episode.
Okay.
When Eugene and Rosita were being chased by a bunch of zombies and they jump and slid down. Because for some reason, the zombies went past them, right? Going in one direction. Mm-hmm. So they went the other way. And then for some unknown reason, the herd turned around for no reason and came back at them later. So they're running and they're jumping down, slide down the. the bank and cover themselves in mud to cover their scent, right? But the zombie horde's walking by them, and then it's like, where are they? Don't let them get away. It's going like, oh, yeah. Whispering.
Wonder where that from. Yeah. Yeah, well, interesting.
But no spoilers, but those who know the books, they're also getting ready for the fair. And we know what happens during the fair.
And it ain't pretty. That was one of my favorite moments in the entire Walking Dead series.
Yeah. Yes. So no spoilers. No spoilers. If they do that, man, there are people.
Let's just say they were taking notes from George R. R. Martin for that one.
Oh man.
Let me just say that heads are gonna roll.
So, but it'll be interesting to see, like, with the show, because with what happens in the comic books, like. There's a lot of stuff that happens. And
don't read ahead, but there's
not
a,
off.
Don't read ahead, but there's a lot on stake.
Ooh.
when you're trying to make so many puns that it just gives away anything.
What?
But I mean, the comics are like 3 or 4 years old at this point.
Vlad the Impaler gives this plot thread 2 thumbs up.
More like 30.
But I don't know.
Carol has become, because Carol died in the book, essentially she's become almost Andrea.
What? Carol's still alive?
Yeah.
How the hell is Carol still alive?
Watch the show, give it a chance.
No!
Okay. Anyways.
Oh my god, this is bullshit.
It's very interesting how her character is just really interesting, because she's kind of adopted this boy from the kingdom. And she basically calls him his son, basically. But they're going along doing a whatever run with their horse and cart, and a group of saviors who are now hiding and against everybody rob them. And Carol does nothing, right? And this guy's like, well, why didn't you do anything? And she's blah, 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 whatever. So later that night, he falls asleep. And then you see the saviors that robbed them all sleeping, right? And they made a point of showing the one guy that was in charge having this big match hanging out of his mouth that he was chewing on, right? So the saviors wake up, or you see Carol reach down and grab the match out of his mouth as he's sleeping, and she backs up and they wake up, and they're all covered in gasoline, right? This is Carol, like, and she's like, you know, blah, 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 and then she just lights it up.
Carol's death in the comic was one of the best.
Yeah, she walked. She gave up and walked into the.
She was upset because she figured that Rick and Rick's horrible wife, whose name I can't remember,
Lori,
that they were going to be like a threesome type couple.
Oh yes, that's
right. And then when Lori and Rick were like, she was like, "What do you mean?" And she's like. No, we're not into that. Yeah. And then she was kind of ostracized because it got really, really awkward. Mm-hmm. And then she just basically in front of everybody, like, walked and gave herself up to, like, to be eaten by zombies.
Yeah.
Like, it was the first suicide in Walking Dead, the comic series. I don't know if there's been another suicide.
I don't know.
It was intense because it was very early on in the series. It was such, and she was such a fractured character. Like, she was one of the most emotionally damaged characters in the early days of that series. So powerful. And, you know, we talked about it recently on the show about how I, as a fan, I don't make sense and I contradict myself a lot. Okay? I contradict myself constantly with these TV shows. Constantly. I can watch something like Titans where nothing makes sense compared to the comic, and I love it. Mm-hmm. Sabrina, oh my god, I am like so in love with that series, and I mean it doesn't work with the traditional Sabrina lore, but it goes off crazy weird from even this horror Sabrina comic, right?
Yeah.
And I love it. Meanwhile, something like Walking Dead, I'm like, if it's not the source material, I am not interested, you know? Yeah. X-Men. I saw the trailer to the new X-Men film when I went and saw Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
It don't make sense at all continuity-wise, and I can't wait! You know what I mean? Like, so I don't make sense. But, I mean, why do I hate the original? I hate the 1989 Tim Burton Batman movie.
Hmm.
Because the Joker kills his Bruce Wayne's parents. That's stupid. That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Source material. So I make no sense. I make no sense.
Yeah.
Okay? I'll be the first to admit it. But what I think bothers me... Oh, here I go again. Do I really want to say what bothers me with Walking Dead? Because I think I just understood it by the way we were talking.
Well, we can go back some more episodes and listen to what you've said before.
I think it's this. It's because there's so many beautiful, amazing moments, like the death of Carol, which is powerful.
Yeah.
Or the character that Andrea became in the comic, which was so powerful and movie and stuff like that. Carl is one of the most complex characters in the comic and stuff like that. And the TV show, just these are iconic characters and moments, and they're so interesting. And the TV show is like, eh. You know what I mean? It just goes all willy-nilly. I don't – maybe that's why I'm just not
– The problem is you've got two different medias.
Right? Yeah.
Robert Kirkman's in charge of Walking Dead, the comic.
Yeah.
Like 20 other people in charge of the TV show, right? So, and they're human beings, and it comes down to money, people infighting, and it has to change. It's unfortunate.
I guess.
But, and Carl has to grow, so they have to do multiple time jumps.
Yeah.
He's not an 8-year-old anymore.
We'll just recast him like they did in The Crown.
Like,
I'm just saying,
But the thing with Carl is that apparently the actor's dad wanted more money, and they're like, no, and all of a sudden Carl's dead. Is that a coincidence? I don't think so. I still swear, you know, the actor and actress that played Dale and Andrea were both in The Mist movie, which was directed by Frank Darabont. And after Frank got fired, their characters were dead. I mean, especially Dale. Dale went pretty quick after that. And then Andrea's, I mean, I know people look at me like I'm crazy, but I don't think that's a coincidence that two people who are probably good friends with Frank Darabont leave the show not long after he's fired.
You know, Margot Kidder was, do you know why she's barely in Superman 3?
Because she's sick?
Or no.
Contract?
What it was because when they fired Richard Donner from Superman 2, she was the one who actually publicly spoke out to the press.
Yeah.
So they reduced her part in Superman 3.
It's a punishment. Human factor, unfortunately.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. They had her back in Superman 4, but we all want to forget about that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you have to. I know Daryl Dixon, blah, blah, blah. You don't like him, but.
I don't know what he is.
The TV show has had some awesome moments.
I bet you it has.
Like, in the comics, Sophia's still alive. That's Carol's daughter, right? Yeah, Carol's daughter, Sophia. She's still alive in the comics.
Oh, yeah. She's amazing in the comics.
Well, they killed her off a while back, but the way they did it was, you remember that, Dan, right?
Like,
it's on the farm, and the group is fighting with Herschel and his family about keeping these zombies in the barn and trying to treat them like humans, right? So they're fighting outside the barn, and whatever happens, the barn door opens, and I'm going, oh, no. And these zombies start pouring out, right? And sure enough, there's little Sophia that they've been looking for like a week. And she's all zombie. And I was like, oh, you didn't. Right? It was just crazy. It was just like, oh, my. And then, of course, they had to put her down, right?
Oh,
but
yeah.
It was just, to me, one of those memorable moments. Like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
But.
Well, anyway. So, you know what? That's one thing where I'm going to always have to accept that I'm in the minority.
Yeah.
There's certain things that I have to accept that I'm in the minority of. Walking Dead, Matt Smith, and Big Bang Theory.
Yes.
Three things. My trilogy of awful, which everybody loves.
But I will say, you have to think that this opens up a lot for them on Walking Dead.
Yeah. Right? Basically, like, it's wide open again.
Yeah. Like, they can do flashbacks because they've got hints of bad stuff that happens.
Yeah. They've got 6 years of a time jump where they can tell stories from.
Mm-hmm. But the Whispers, I mean... That's going to be pretty cool.
Didn't they introduce the Whispers after the time jump in the comic?
Yeah.
And
like that's, you know, like I was watching the episode with Tabitha and we were talking about it. And then she pointed out like the time jump is great because time has to pass for the characters. They can't just be constantly facing wave after wave of like bad guys. Like nobody could survive that.
Yeah.
So the time jump is great because the viewers still have no downtime as far as like there's still something cool and interesting coming, but for the characters, like 6 years of living in peace and being happy and building, and now they've got something to lose again instead of it just being constant war, constant whatever, right?
Yeah.
Mm. Which is why the time jumps work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it should be good.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, how are you guys making out with Doctor Who? Because I'm having troubles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not, I'm just finding I'm watching it and falling asleep. And like a week later, I'll go back and watch the rest of the episode and hopefully get through it.
The last, I don't even remember what happened in the last episode.
It was going back to the one girl's grandma's past.
Oh, I haven't,
yes.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet.
Right?
No, I just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
What was the one before that?
I didn't even finish that episode. There was some weird little creature running around.
Oh, that was people. That one was awful.
I didn't even finish
that
it.
That one was sad. Really terrible. I'm for the most part, I'm still enjoying Jodie Whittaker in a big way.
Yeah.
I really like her.
I like her too.
But you know what? After the brilliance of that Rosa Parks episode, well, I've only ever seen one since then, and it wasn't that great. So I don't know. I haven't seen the new one. I guess I don't have an opinion. I've been watching Sabrina and Titans. Oh, yeah. I'm sure you do, Dan.
So I have watched, I've only watched up to the Rosa episode.
Okay.
And the Rosa episode was a great History Channel documentary. I learned a lot about Rosa Parks that day.
Yeah.
But it's not a Doctor Who episode.
I guess
the,
not.
The doctor didn't do anything in it. All she did was try to stop somebody else from doing something and say, we have to let history happen.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's not exciting. Like, I watched the whole episode. A lot of times, I don't have a lot of time in a row, so my episodes get interrupted, and I watch it over, like, two nights. But I sat on the couch, watched that entire episode, and I wasn't bored, but I just wasn't really entertained. Like, Doctor Who isn't entertaining to me now.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
What are you doing that you can't watch an hour episode
in I have
one sit?
Many things on the go.
Well, I do too.
This is the only hour I sit down for a week.
My God, I'm working two jobs, man.
It's just the way I am.
You're a lucky man, Dan.
Not really. Well, it's terrible. It's right. Terrible.
Anyways,
terrible.
Like, I still have time to watch at least 5 movies a week.
Yeah, I
time management, my friend. That. I should move into your world and time manage your life.
There you go.
I bet you
that
I
like
could.
An awesome idea.
I think that does sound like a great idea, and I won't even charge you. All
you
I want,
won't charge me. Okay, good.
I won't
good.
Even charge you to time manage your life. Maybe some food. Do you make? You know, if you're willing to kick me food, I will time manage your life for you.
I think I'm doing okay.
Okay. Anyways, go on.
But like, so also, a lot of the fans that I know aren't very happy with the current series. Which, and even some fans who are super excited about Jodie Whittaker are like, they just don't like the way her character is being written.
Really?
Like, because
I love the way her character's being
but
written.
Like,
and I'd be the first to go, that's not my doctor.
But like, what has she actually done in the episodes you've seen? Like, that's doctor-like.
But she's not doctor-like.
But like, she just does a lot of, like,
She runs a lot.
But nowhere. Like, I just don't... She's not... If you could almost take her out of the show, and the plot would still happen.
Oh, good point.
Like, she's not important to the plot. Like, Capaldi owned every minute of the show.
Every minute of the show.
And the show was about him.
It's like... She's like kind of like Tom Selleck in Blue Bloods.
Like they've took
all
the
star
team
power,
concept.
But not actually doing anything.
They've took the idea of it being a team too far because now the doctor isn't important anymore.
Interesting.
You know, it's kind of like a lot of people felt this way when Clara was getting pretty full of herself and acting like she was the doctor, and people were like, "She's not the doctor. The doctor's the doctor." And then what happened to Clara? She got herself killed by pretending to be the doctor. You know, by thinking she's as smart and as clever as a doctor. And Jodie Whittaker she's not written as a clever character, I don't think. She's just a character.
Hmm.
Also, I keep saying this. Anybody who has talked to me about Doctor Who is going to yell at me to shut up already. But there's no magic in the show anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it just, you're watching a very blandly shot show.
Let me ask you something. Do you think that they'll have to either change it greatly, or do you think this is it? Do you think that the show's going to end on Jodie Whittaker? Do you think she will be the last Doctor?
So I've heard some rumors that apparently Chris Chibnall isn't very happy with the job. Okay. And so we had talked about the fact that there might not be Doctor Who next year.
Right.
And also there's no Christmas episode has been pushed back
to
January in order to have some Doctor Who for 2019. So apparently there won't be anything maybe except for that one episode in 2019. So take from that what you will.
See, that's an example of the issue I have with the show. Jodie Whittaker, she's great. I love her as an actress. But if you're going to make such a big change with the Doctor, you can't forget and throw out all the rest of the history.
Because
how many episodes are we now? Four or five?
Five have aired, yeah.
We've not seen any hint of any other typical bad guys or any other history of the Doctor. Any reference to it, like nothing. Like, it doesn't even exist.
Do you think there'll be a Dalek episode this season?
Well, I don't think so. I highly doubt it.
Yeah,
and I think
I'm
that's
not
the
sure.
mistake they're making. Mm. Right, you can make a huge change to the Doctor, but if you change everything else, it's too much in one shot, I think.
Kind of like... I'm not even going to finish that sentence.
Okay. Because, I mean, watching the, I don't know, first or second episode when the companions or whatever, the friends, went in the TARDIS for the first time.
Yeah.
Not one of them said it's bigger on the inside. Like, how could you not, for that 2 second line that everybody loves to hear as a fan of Doctor Who?
Yeah.
No, nobody said it. Like, it's like they're trying to purpose to take every single thing from the history of Doctor Who and throw it out the window. The only thing we've got that's from the past episodes is the TARDIS and the sonic screwdriver.
Hmm.
Everything else is different. They don't even mention it. Like, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, and like I was saying during our long-form Doctor Who episode, you know, when Matt Smith took over and he, like, literally stepped through a picture of David Tennant,
mm-hmm.
like, because they were paying homage to all the Doctors,
yeah.
and then boom. And here, it is a new creative team, sure, but that was a new creative team. That was Stephen Moffat taking over for that episode.
Yep.
So why can they not have some of the history? And also, but like, it doesn't make sense. Let's talk about business-wise. Doctor Who is a business. Mm-hmm. Aren't you supposed to take these new fans you're getting and turn them on to the old show
sure.
so that they'll buy it? Right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, at the very... I'm not saying somebody's going to watch Jodie Whittaker and then go watch William Hartnell, because that's not going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
But they might watch the rest of the new series.
Traditionally, you never hear an old-school Doctor Who fan going, I don't like the new show. I have a couple of times, but those guys were just being assholes. All right? But generally, you don't. Generally, you never... The people who like the old show like the new show. You just do. Right? Because it all makes sense. It all fits together.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what you're saying. My favorite Doctor is John Pertwee. Who's my second favorite Doctor? Well, it's Peter Davidson. But who's my third favorite Doctor?
Capaldi.
And who comes after that?
Matt Smith.
David Tennant. The fact that I can, you know, and if we talk about some of my favorite companions, I'm going to go to the 60s, I'm going to go to the 70s, I'm going to go to the current series, you know, I'm going to be all the fact that I can love, you know, my favorite master will always be Roger Delgado, but my second favorite master is
Missy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like that it's exactly what you're saying. It does unite fans.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, what you said about the Christmas episode. It's tradition.
It's yeah. tradition.
Who cares if it's 2019?
It's tradition.
You have to put it in December.
Yeah.
And have it as a Christmas episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they don't put River Song in there soon, I'm done.
I don't care if I don't see her again.
See, like, it's okay. It's okay to, River Song is a Stephen Moffat created character. Yeah, it's okay to not have her in there. Like when Stephen Moffat took over, we didn't have Captain Jack anymore or any of the previous companions except in like a special, you know, like they, it's tradition to not keep those characters going too much because they belong to somebody else. However, the Daleks don't belong to Stephen Moffat, you know?
No, they belong to Terry Nation.
They belong to the BBC.
Actually, they don't. The BBC do not own the Daleks. It's actually Terry Nation's estate and still owns the rights to them.
You know what? If they can make a Macra episode with David Tennant, then you can use some obscure monster to tie into the past and just do that.
I will always forever say that the only person I want back on Doctor Who is Susan Foreman. For the love of God, finish that plot. Capaldi said he was going to do it by the time he was done.
Yeah.
What happened?
Here's the thing. Stephen Moffat loved the show. He was a fan. Chris Chibnall, I'm just going to say he's not a fan of the show. Yeah. If he wants to fight over it, then let's fight. He's not a fan of the show because if you loved the show, you wouldn't be treating it the way you are.
Yeah.
You would have the magic in there, even if it's your version of the magic.
So why is he doing this? Why is he there?
Because they wanted to do something probably drastically different than Moffat.
Did he apply for it?
Yes, I guess. But, like, I don't know. Yes.
Well, look at something like John Nathan Turner, right? Which is a very a figure that either you love or you
controversial,
hate. Controversial, polarizing figure. I am a fan of John Nathan Turner. I don't think he's perfect, but I am a fan. But Turner hated it after a while, and he loved it at first, but he learned to hate it and literally destroyed it. I believe, and I've talked about this, I've written about this, I believe that John Nathan Turner tried to actually, the whole Colin Baker era is him sabotaging the show. Like, he literally was trying to make the show terrible so he could
get out of his contract.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, let's get this thing canceled. So I'm going to make every awful mistake possible. And, you know, I'm going to make the Doctor a pompous ass. I'm going to make him and his companion fight all the time. I'm going to give him the worst costume of all time, you know. But he wanted, you know, but as I understand, he was assigned the job originally. He didn't actually apply. Was this guy, what's his name?
Chris Chibnall.
Yeah.
He applied.
He applied. He wasn't given it.
Unless there's some behind the scenes blackmail or something.
Oh, but I guess.
Like I don't know. Yeah. If this is his vision of Doctor Who, it feels like somebody who's never watched the show. I keep having this thought that it's like Doctor Who run by a committee. Like,
wow,
like just,
that's a really good. As I said, overall, I like.
It's watchable.
It's watchable. Okay,
I'm enjoying it enough to watch it, but I'm just not. There's no heart in it.
But
right
this
now.
Thing is, remember, I said I don't even remember if I watched last week's episode or not.
Yeah.
So that is, right. That's what I understand what you're saying, and I understand what you're saying, and I understand you guys are,
You can't change everything. You want to make a drastic change to make the Doctor a woman? Fine. But you can't throw everything else out the window.
Speaking of drastic change, that's all the time we have. Time to go drastically change the programming.
There you go.
You can tune in to iTunes, get more of our episodes, or Google Play, or Stitcher for our previous episodes.
Enough said.
You have been listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Ontario, and available as a downloadable podcast at www.heykidscomics.ca and at www.firstcomicsnews.com. Promotional consideration for the show was provided by no one. Are you kidding me? We couldn't get advertisers if we tried. Wardrobe for our hosts was provided by Joe Nerds in Whitby, Ontario. They don't know that fact, but that is where we get 90% of our clothes from. No animals were harmed in the making of this radio show. Marty tried, but allergies won't let him get too close to Sam's cats. The views and opinions expressed by Sam are solely his own and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the rest of the hosts, as we all like The Walking Dead TV show. The Hey Kids Comics Radio Show is a Quinn Martin production and copyright Hey Kids Comico. Rebroadcasting in part or in whole of this show is forbidden, but really, would want to anyway?